Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of We Got This podcast. Every guest that has been on this podcast has a standing invitation to come back and do another episode. So I was delighted when Luisa Leisenberg decided to come back to talk about a topic that's very, very close to her heart. And for those who don't know Luisa, she's a director of talent and organization at MVP Factory. And last time we spoke about how to scale, or the art of scaling businesses. And she's a seasoned HR professional with over 12 years experience in startups and scale-ups in Berlin across various industries. And as someone who's been diagnosed with ADHD later in her life, she's passionate about promoting workplaces and environments that are inclusive and accommodating of neurodiversity. And neurodiversity is a topic that we briefly touched upon last time that Luisa was here. And we promised ourselves that we will come back and we'll do it again. And this time specifically focusing on that very topic. And that's what we're going to be doing today. So Luisa, thank you very much for coming back. Well, and most of all, welcome back.
We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this.
Hi, thank you for having me, Eric.
Fantastic to have you here, because we've been trying to get this sorted. We've had it in the diary for September, which is good. We made that. However, we did have some difficulty catching up over summer, partially through my ineptitude of managing calendars, but partially, as you said, and we laughed about it, the impact of your ADHD and the structure. I don't know, challenges that you experienced. I don't know even what word to use here, that kind of prevented us from catching up in I think June, July, and August. We had kind of little check-ins, but obviously you were busy as well, which contributed to that.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I am very dependent on my calendar. So whenever things are in there, they will happen. If they're not in there, chances are that I keep procrastinating them or pushing them or forget to answer because it's just not in the right part of my brain. But I'm really, really happy that we get to this today. And thank you for catching up again.
always. It's been very fun. And it's actually quite nice to get a random email or message from you every now and again back in June that I'll never forget this. Oh, I've been sitting on a park bench and I've been talking about company culture to somebody. And I think you should too. You two should talk about it as well. And you connected me with the person that actually connected with me with you in the first place, which is really very, very, very nice. And that calendar thing, that's fully on me, as we discussed earlier. So let's not get into that, maybe. But I am very curious about, because as you said, as I said in the bio, which obviously I received from you, is you are someone who's been diagnosed with ADHD later on in life. And before we potentially move on to how neurodiversity impacts how we work in teams and how our organizations are structured as a result of that, I'm curious, what made you go down that route of diagnosis? Was it something that somebody pointed out to you? Did you actually actively go and seek it out? Would you be able to tell us a little bit more about your journey?
Absolutely. Before we start, I feel like I need to admit something, but I guess that's totally the wrong term, right? I so far haven't been officially diagnosed with a piece of paper, because it's kind of like the spiral of somebody who hates making appointments and hates to run after making appointments. And then it's really difficult to actually get an appointment with a psychiatrist here in Berlin, because the mental health status or system of Germany is kind of bad. So the diagnosis is not on self-diagnosed. People talk to me, people tested me, but there is no official piece of paper yet, meaning I just to keep this clear. But we also talk a bit about the role of a diagnosis for people, especially when they're part of the workforce. How did I start going down that rabbit hole? Thanks a lot to caring friends and colleagues. People with neurodiversities, they tend to come together and click well because of our brains function in a similar different way than neurotypical people. So there is a saying, it's like, if there's one neurodivergent friend in a group, you can be sure there are more. It's a bit like when you break your arm and suddenly you like you see everybody walking around with a cast on their leg. Suddenly it's like they're everywhere. And thanks to a lot of science, thanks to a lot of research, and thanks to a lot of like also advocates for mental health and for neurodivergency, this topic becomes more and more known. So it's easier for people to actually realize that's something that's true for them as well. Especially for women and girls, because many women and girls don't get diagnosed until later in life because of like gender stereotypes and ADHD or autism being like boy things and girls being pushed into certain roles very, very early on in life, like not being the loud one, always being the helpful one. And then it manifests much, much differently. So nobody talked to me about this when I was a child, but then now as a grown up, as like in my when I was 30, I had this conversation with a close friend who also is neurodivergent. And I was like, hey, so do you actually also have this, like this constant jukebox in your head? If somebody says a sentence that somewhat refers to lyrics from a song that you know, the song goes off. And like, I have this constant jukebox in my head, problematic because I don't know any lyrics. So it's always just like half of a line of a lyric that goes off my head. While having conversations, or like I talk very, very fast. And as a teenager, I always said I talk that fast because I have to catch up with my thoughts that are already like 5 miles ahead of me being able to speak. And then she was like, but you do know that like all these things, they're ADHD symptoms, right? And I was like, what? And then we talked more about it because she knew more about it back then than I did. And she was like, Louisa, I've known you for the past 3-ish years. I think that's a thing for you. And then I talked to my HR manager at work and she was like, duh, have you met yourself? The only, like one of the reasons I signed with your company is because I finally had a boss who understood me because they are like me. And I was like, I'm what? And then I talked to my best friend who's a doctor and she was like, Louisa, I know you for 16 years. You didn't know? So every conversation I had with people who know me very well, who either work with me for a longer time already or close friends, they were like, but how did you not know? You're like textbook ADHD. You do these 10 things all the time. I'm like, thank you for telling me, I guess. Whole journey started of like reading up, focusing, creating this, or having this hyper-focus on learning about symptoms, learning how not only things like not being able to do your laundry well because of ADHD paralysis or executive dysfunction, or constantly switching between 90 tabs on your desktop. These are one things, but how it also connects to nutrition, for example, or to sleeping, like sleep issues, or even like, why do you have more headaches than other people? So all these things then started rolling. Talked to also like friends who are psychiatrists and psychologists, but that's why they cannot treat me because we're friends. It's like, okay, cool, it's a thing. Thank you very much. Know it now. And then also conversations with my family and they were like, yeah, so I know this since I'm 30 myself, but I was like, why? They could have been a very different path in my life. And then also this, okay, what does this mean for other people, right? What does this mean for my job? Because I care for people at my work, how they work and how they also compensate for mental health problems or how fast or slow they can burn out. Like all these things are connected to ADHD, autism, dyslexia, all these like neurodivergencies, as well as how do they manage conflicts? How do they communicate? How do they lead projects? How do they receive feedback? How do they deliver feedback? This all is like very different to neurotypical brains, yet all companies are organized or structured for neurotypical people, despite the fact that especially in tech and especially in startup scene, above average many, that was not the correct grammar, you also actually are also neurodivergent. Because like people with ADHD have a very strong sense of entrepreneurship. People with autism have a very, very strong sense for of course, lots of cliches in there, right? Not every ADHDer is this, or not every autistic person is that, or not every dyslexic person is a great problem solver. But the tendencies are there. So if you look into entrepreneurs, many, many people are diagnosed. If you look into high-performance sports people, not the correct term.
Well, if I may jump in here for a sec, because you are touching upon some very important aspects that I want to cover in terms of how that's impacting how we are at work. But there's one thing that's always on my mind, and in a way, I'm curious how it is from your perspective, because in a way you said that you admitted at the beginning that you're not officially, you don't have that piece of paper that says that you've been diagnosed, but you've gone through pretty much the entire process and the only thing that's missing is that piece of paper. And it comes purely from not knowing enough about this area, this topic, that I feel somewhat conflicted when it comes to potentially being, let's say, diagnosed with ADHD, because that's what we're talking about. That kind of gives a label, right? It puts a label on the person. And then potentially it might have a negative impact on the person because that person's going to be treated in a special way. Like I'm thinking about if this is a child, if we're talking about early days, and that child's going to be treated differently. It's going to be put through some special programs because, you know, in their school, in the education system, Poland, in the UK, in Germany, or in Italy, or wherever, they might be a little bit ostracized, that they're different, that it's actually creating more problems. Or it might be that it's kind of used as an excuse, if that makes sense. It's like, whatever, I've got ADHD, right? And what I'm getting at is, in a way, it's fascinating that you said that yourself, everybody around you knew about it apart from you. And you were functioning, you had relationships, you had a lot of people to ask, you had friends, you had, from what I can understand, a successful career as well, and building teams. And so in a way, without that, as I said, label, you still were managed to do that. So in a way, I'm curious how big a deal it is that we actually get diagnosed, or we just kind of accept the fact that people are different. I think my question for you is, in this particular case, did you feel that this is actually something that added more weight to your life, or actually did that free you up and you all of a sudden, you know, like 10 tons off your back were lifted and you feel much lighter and everything's much easier? I'm curious. I'm really curious about that.
One thing definitely, like, what is my experience, I cannot talk for anybody else. Like, there's no one answer, of course. In my personal case, it took a massive weight off my shoulders because it made, like, things fell in place. Things made much more sense. Like, the whole thing of why am I not more structured? Why did I never, like, back in school, I never took notes. Like, I love the first weeks of a school year because it's the most fun thing in the world to buy a new, like, paper, like, new books, new notebooks, new pens. And then, like,
I'm so the same.
Right. But then after 2 or 3 weeks, you could see, okay, now she only wrote down one sentence for the whole day. And like, I never did my homework because I just like didn't have the tools to cope with how my brain was working already back then. Luckily, I could compensate through being in a very privileged position of going to a very good school, having very good teachers, being kind of smart. So that's why it didn't like impact me back then already. At the same time, I never pulled through with any kind of hobbies, dropped everything I started. So it definitely had an impact on me. I dropped out of university. I piled up debt. I piled up, like, I wasted so much money on paying fees for being late with my payment or stuff. Like, that's all connected. And I didn't know why. And I, like, this also, of course, comes like with a lot of self-doubt and, like, especially for women who have a career in that space, something like imposter syndrome is much more intense in many cases. So it, like, it takes a toll on you, especially on your mental health again. It also takes a toll on your physical health because, again, things function differently in your body. And for me, knowing that there is a reason and that things are connected and I can start managing things differently took a lot of weight off my shoulders. Would I have been stigmatized as a kid, or if I say it, like if I talk about it now at work, am I looked at differently? Me personally, not. Again, like, extremely privileged position. Like, I have worked with an amazing team, have an amazing team around me within the leadership of MEP Factory. I got lucky, I think. And also in the workplace, like, many, many people don't speak up about their neurodivergencies, especially if they already tick other diversity boxes, right? You as a person then decide which is the easiest battle you want to fight. And if you already chose to fight a battle like coming out as queer or being a person of color, you then not necessarily want to add like another space where people could discriminate against you. So nobody's expected to, like, nobody, I wouldn't say it is better for you to officially talk about your diagnosis or your own mental neurodivergency. I wouldn't say it helped me that it wasn't official before in my life, because again, like, people with neurodivergencies, they're not diagnosed, much more often start some self, like, unconscious self-medication. Like, there's much, much bigger addiction problems. They run into burnout much, much faster. And, like, not knowing this, therefore, is always a risk. When I look at my kids now, like, all these things are very hereditary. For ADHD specifically, it's 40 to 50% hereditary. I have two girls. Chances are very high at least one of them has it. looking at them, I'd say both. Am I diagnosing them officially at the moment with doctors? No, because yes, maybe then teachers look at them differently. But I think it's really, really important for us as a family to be aware of that so we can actually equip them with tools. Like brushing your teeth is such a fight. Not even the normal, that's just always a fight with kids, but it's just more intense because of reasons. And now that we know the reasons, we can like talk to them differently, have more patience with them, give them like, put like more reminders next to the mirror of the things that you have to do before you can leave the house, stuff like that. So I wouldn't say it's good to not know, but it's like important for you to know. It's not important for others to know.
Thank you very much for sharing all of that, your journey and how it's been for you, and obviously now your girls as well. And I appreciate these private things close to the heart, close to the chest. I really appreciate that you were willing to open up about that. You mentioned that obviously you've got a fantastic team around you, MVP Factory, that can help you in a way with this through it. Again, not sure what words to use here, but I know that you were looking to do a little bit of research of that, as we said, into how this impacts people within workplaces. Have you done anything internally with your teams to kind of help people understand themselves better, or how they kind of communicate to kind of bring this topic to the surface a little bit more?
Yes, so it's always like kind of a thin line to walk, right? Because as the person who was responsible for HR, you cannot walk around and say, hey, by the way, are you aware that you might have been neurodivergent too, right? Because just not my place. And I, of course, again, like it's the whole once you know kind of thing, and it takes one to know one. So how I'm approaching this at the moment together with my team is, again, I'm in the lucky position of being able to choose what we do and how we do go about things. So the first thing I did back when it manifested that that's part of me. My HR manager and I, we just gave a presentation to the company about like, hey, so this is how ADHD works in women, and this is how the ADHD works in other people, and this is how we are impacted by this. So if you keep needing things from us and we keep forgetting, it's not because we're lazy, it's not because we don't care. It can be that these three things happen for us, and this is the help that we require. On the other side, this is the help we can offer you all for all these other things, right? So we were just like, we chose to be super open about it, which then had like the consequence that more people came forward and say, hey, thank you so much. I have that too, or I have something else, or now that you talk about this, so many, like it rings a bell. And do you have some like books you can recommend? Like who should I talk to find out if this makes, like if I am that? And like in the whole process of this, I like look deeper into what are topics that we as a company are struggling with and what are things that we as a company are extremely good at. We are a project-based work environment. So our employees get to dive into very different industries, very different topics, very, very deep, very, very fast, and then jump to the next thing, which is something that people with neurodivergencies appreciate a lot at times. Again, at times, right? Others might really, really need a lot of structure, a lot of like steadiness. They would not like working with us. But like this whole diversity in work topics is really interesting. At the same time, one of our challenges and one of our growth challenges while growing and scaling was always like the diligence for own internal like operational excellence topics, time tracking, all these like the neat kind of things, like chores. At home, it would be doing the laundry and changing the broken light bulb after the first week, or not after the first quarter. So the chores of a company were things that we are not necessarily the best at. So I at one point started joking, the GmbH in itself, so the company in itself, like the organism company, maybe has ADHD. Until I realized, maybe I'm not even wrong. Maybe we're just like more people than in the average place, because the whole like project hopping thing is attractive, and like entrepreneurship is something we're really prone to. So that's also attractive. And then like this whole confirmation bias kind of thing, hiring, like without knowing, we hired people who have a tendency for neurodivergency above average. Like the average numbers say, like in every company or in the world, 20% of all people are neurodivergent. Different diagnosis, but they're neurodivergent. Which then must mean that no matter where you work, around you, in your organization, in your family, in your sports club, 20% of the people are neurodivergent. It means it's a huge amount of people that you actually have to care for differently. And I think within our company, the ratio is higher. Again, I'm not allowed to diagnose anybody just because I feel like it, but that's the hypothesis that we're working with. And this also means, okay, do we have to change things a bit? Do we have to just like have more reminders for chores? Do we have to have like 5 different reminders for chores? Time booking, for example. For a neurotypical person, this is like, okay, cool. I do time booking once a day or once a week, always at the same time, easy, done. It takes like 2 minutes. Yet we always have the issue that our employees don't track their hours. Like we need them to write invoices sometimes. So we had to come up with ways to make this happen. Right now we have like 3 different emails. We have a calendar blocker for every Friday where people could even like jump into a meeting and do it together. We remind on Slack, we remind in conversations, like it needs these different things to trigger different brain types, which is totally normal, but which many companies don't take the time to do. And like that's one of the tiny things that we can easily do, or things like providing people the space to speak up about what communication needs they have. When people join us, we do a feedback workshop with them. And part of the feedback workshop is that they actually write down how they like to receive feedback. Is it something that triggers like anxiety in them? Okay, cool. This means they always need like notes before the meeting to feel like a bit safer about it. Do they want to have that at the end of the day? So afterwards they can like space out and say, yo, thank you, I need a break. Or do they always want it like in like a walking conversation? Or how often do they need positive feedback? How often do they need to be appreciated to feel good about themselves or to feel like not impostery, right? And all these things help for a neuroinclusive environment because they're not only good for neurodivergent people, they're also really good for neurotypical people because like it's about communication and relationship building. So that's what we look deeper into in the past year, adjusting the way we create policies, we write about policies. The way we do our onboarding is currently changing massively. We're going to launch that to our team doesn't know yet. We're going to launch this next month. The way we are building our learning and development strategy is also impacted by that, of course. Like what trainings do we offer? How do we do coaching? All these things.
In a way, you sort of already answered the question that I'm about to ask you, because I'm trying to think about what this means, you know, from a manager's, a leader's point of view, be it a supervisor, team leader, or somebody higher up within an organization. You know, what steps could they take? Because you're right, we can't just start walking around the company looking at people and going, I think you, right? You can't do that. Even probably if you're professionally trained to be able to have the diagnosis. So I'm wondering what individuals like managers could do in situations like that to ease the process, because I think it's easy because the example that you gave of timesheets that rings so close to home for me from my project management days when it was, you know, the little things that I couldn't get the teams that I was working with to do that helped me to help them do their jobs, because I always saw myself in the role of project manager as kind of that linchpin between people, between departments, between teams, and as someone who needs to remove roadblocks for them. I treated them as experts. My role was to help them out. But for me to be able to help them out, I needed them to come to me with certain things or give me certain things as well, just so that I got the information knowledge. And yeah, sometimes so difficult. And, you know, it was easy for me to then in situations like that, if I needed some sort of report data, whatever, for me to say, oh my God, they're so lazy, they're so disorganized. Why the hell they didn't get it to me and things like that, right? So it's easy to fall into that trap. The questions are now, you know, what can a person in such a position do? The things that you mentioned about the workshop, the feedback workshop, you know, having these conversations at the start and introducing these different, I don't want to say even policies, but ways of doing things, like you said about the time tracking that you've got through from your emails, you introduce the Slack channel, you send reminders, basically all these little practices. Is that kind of what you would suggest, or is there a different way that managers could approach this without diving into the topic of, you know, who isn't potentially neurodivergent, doesn't matter, but to potentially cater this for neurodivergent people, but most of all, make them, everybody's lives easier as a result.
I think the most important thing that managers, but also companies have to acknowledge is every brain is different. Like not even neurodivergence and neurotypicals, even within the neurotypicals, every brain is different. Brains are, or the way brains function are as unique as fingerprints. So I think we work in an industry and in an age, in a generation where leadership became much more people-centric already, at least again in our industry that we work in, and became much, much easier to be a people-centric, empathic leader. You got the space for that because this also is like where the whole work world kind of shifts towards to. Before we met today, we briefly talked about me looking deeper into new work and like it all comes together, right? For people to be happy at their workplace, they need to be seen as who they are and they need to be able to come with their full self to work. If you are a company and a manager who allows for that and who enables that, you will have it much, much easier to facilitate very successful employees or employments, so to say, right? So you don't even have to look at to like, okay, who of these people is neurodivergent? Who of them is a bit nuts? I mean, who isn't? So it's just like, okay, I am working with 50 different people. Out of these, 7 are in my direct reports and I'm looking into 7 different humans. It's not like I don't have like little tin soldiers in front of me. So it's always the question, how much system do we need to function? And like to not be over individualistic because we want to be fast, we want to be good, we want to excel. And how much individual approaches do I need to enable people? And like being willed to look at the person and ask the person, hey, what do you need from me? Instead of going, hey, so I'm your lead and my leadership style is A, never B and never C. That's not a recipe for success. Like when we interview senior people or leadership people, one of my questions is, and like it's the only trick question I ask, right? It's this whole like, what is your leadership style? And when then somebody comes to me and explains to me how they're a laissez-faire leader, and like the one thing I want to hear from you is I have no one leadership style. I adapt my style to what my employees need from me. And they're like, okay, well, thank you very much. So it's this whole thing about having this conversation with your employees at the beginning and then throughout the year is how can I support you best and what do you need from me? Where do you need me to be very, very micromanaging? And where do you need me to be an annoying prick that asks you 5 times if you've done that? And where do you need me to get off your back and just say, that's the goal, please reach it and come back to me once you've reached it. I don't care how you get there. Like, you know, finding ways to navigate this is important.
But then what happens in the situation if the person being asked doesn't know? Or can't verbalize it?
Then, I mean, one way is to just like try and error. So if I have somebody come to me and say, I don't know, when I ask this question, okay, cool, let's try it out. My assumption is ABC because like I'm your lead. So I will make an assumption here right now. And then let's test this together. Then, I mean, we have weekly one-on-ones or bi-weekly one-on-ones. And we check in on, is this working for you? Do we need more one-on-ones? Like with one of my team members, I have bi-weekly 1.5-hour sessions. And the other week in this rhythm is just like a quick check-in. With another employee, I have just every week 30 minutes and it's very operational. With another employee, I have like, we tend to sometimes not have our one-on-ones. So it's like, do you need my time? Are you all right? Do we know what we're working on? Cool, let's move on, right? So everybody needs different things and we got there through trying and then iterating. The same way you build MVPs, you have a hypothesis, you test something, you build it, you iterate, and you fix bugs. It's just how relationships work as well.
That is true. But yeah, I keep coming back to those situations where, one, people are not sure, yes, and then kind of trial and error and being able to figure it out that way. That's really useful. But then, you know, we live in such a fast-paced environment that very often organizations and people within organizations just don't have the time, don't have the capacity, or you know, or simply are not interested, and others simply don't care. You know, it's tricky. Yeah, which is not helpful. You know, I often when I work with clients and we talk about culture and communication and things like that. You mentioned that you have this feedback workshop at the start. And there's something I often suggest my clients do with their teams is basically get everybody to create a what I call a guide to me. which has all the relevant information that they need within that team, within the organization. We're starting with the basics. You know, I work these hours, I work flexibly, I prefer asynchronous communication, I prefer email versus Slack. If it's a longer thing, if it's a shorter thing or whatever, then this and that way, this is how I prefer feedback, you know, all the good stuff. And often when I talk about these things, you know, everybody's excited. Everybody's really into you know, spending more time to understand one another better. But then somewhere either towards the end of the workshop, the work that we do together, or not long after, unfortunately, the unfortunate reality sets in. And I'm always shocked, especially when it comes to organizations, consulting companies, agencies, and where there are billable hours and they have to make a certain kind of efficiency quota, whatever the metric is, and they're being told, you know, they have to devote 85% of their time to work. And I'm going, well, great, you've got another 15%. And then I did the math of how that is in minutes, quite literally in minutes over a week. If you're on a standard 38, 40-hour contract, no one is, by the way. They've got that contract, but they work much more. But, you know, and it works out to something. They've got maybe half an hour, if they're lucky, across a day or so to be able to do that. That's not possible. Therefore, you know, accommodating for different personalities and making everybody feel at home, I'm a massive proponent and believer in that. But I'm so shocked what happens actually in organizations. And that makes me think that accommodating for neurodivergence and taking that time is so damn difficult.
But it sounds like much more time than it actually takes, I feel, or at least in my experience. It's like also like little things. Yes, the guy to me, you do this during onboarding. During onboarding, you're not as efficient as you should be anyway. So just like do it there. Update this during the performance review phase. Then, but also quick things like if you write emails, take that 1 second. And if you do the subject line, like have before you do like the subject line, something like have a disclaimer, like action required, just FYI, please read, urgent, you know, like have disclaimers that makes it easier for people to categorize within their brain where the task has to go. When writing longer texts, break it down with paragraphs, do like print stuff in bold, use some emojis here and there. Like all these tiny things are like instantly neuro-inclusive and make people much, much faster, which is something that we like, as we just said, because we don't have time for anything. Same goes for, you have to have your one-on-ones anyway. If you don't have your one-on-ones, you're not a good lead. Your people will get unhappy quite fast and they quit on you. So have a structure in your one-on-ones, have a quick check-in, hey, how are you on like a human level? And then let's move on. Be able to like know yourself or like also just like things that help and are really easy and fast to do it after practicing it a bit is like communicate the meta level with what you do. It's like, hey, so today my social battery is super empty. So my small talk will be just, how are you? And then let's please move on. I don't have the capacity today. Done, fine, acknowledged, appreciated. You are seen, you are heard, and you can be you. If you are a person or if you have a person in your team who struggles with social cues or like, you know, I don't know, we always say, okay, people with autism tend to struggle with social cues or with social norms. Don't force them to be the life of the party at every team event. Say, okay, cool, what I expect from you is that you say hi in the morning and we have the check-in and then we're done. Right, then you check this box and you're allowed to be solitary again. So it can be relatively easy, put in a template on how to be neuroinclusive and how to be people friendly. Like check these three boxes and have your to-do list that way and you're fine. If you have a person in your team who you think might have ADHD and therefore struggle with prioritization or procrastination, suggest some things like in your one-on-one or what, not in your one-on-one, but in your daily life where you start your day with a to-do list. Always write down like what helps me massively. I write down like unfreeze tasks. So when my brain gets stuck on like a little monkey not knowing what to do, I look at my to-do list, not at the things I have to do, but there are three tasks that are so easy and so not numbing the other part that just like have to get done anyway at one point. Not fun, not engaging. Just like reach out to three more people or finally call that doctor or sort through that pile of paper that has to go into the trash. And then your brain gets kickstarted again. Like offer your employees different ways of doing your to-do list or doing time management. all the tools we use anyway. We talk about them, we write blog posts about them, we buy licenses for apps for time management. They just need to be rearranged a bit, and that's quite fast, actually.
As we're talking about this, I'm curious because this is a topic that obviously you're much closer to for obvious reasons. When do you think this is going? What's kind of the future of neurodivergence in the workplace over the next 5-10 years? Or maybe you can answer it. I'll give you two options. Well, what do you think the future is? Or maybe what would you like it to be? How would you like this to kind of evolve? If you had a magic wand, so let's do that, Christian. If you had a magic wand, what would you use it for?
I need to start like a bit in the past, right? Because one of the things we struggle with, I think, as a community talking about this, is like, oh my God, is that a new thing? Why does everybody have it nowadays? I was like, no, it's not. It has been around forever. Like, it has been diagnosed already in 1600, 1700, XYZ. It just had different names. So it was always around. I once read a book about working on like organizations and neurodivergency, and they said, and there's no chance in life that the person who came up with a spear was neurotypical. It was a neurodivergent weirdo who didn't feel like sitting at the fire with the others. That's why they withdrew in the back of the cave, always focused on creating a tool. And once they had it, they came back out. And that's why we have a spear. There's no chance it went any different. So it's part of our humanity forever already. So where will this go? Hopefully into the direction where work environments make more space for people finding their own path and like being coaches to their employees, offer them like a set of like a toolbox and then they can pick from and they get the chance to also recalibrate and have bad phases. We have to get there anyway because like burnout rates are not getting lower, but we have to get them lower because otherwise our whole system and beautiful capitalism doesn't work anymore. So my hope would be that we get over this phase of that's a trend quite quickly and then actually get into this doing of, hey, it's not that bad for people in the workforce. Of course, there's always like a huge group of people really, really, really struggle with that and they need help. Like if you look into prison population or homeless people, they are above average neurodivergent as well because they lost their home because they forgot to pay bills, because they are alcoholics, because they're self-medicating. That's a whole different, like we're not even talking about this. We're talking about high-functioning people who are part of our workforce. They need the chance to try things and to fail and have like a bad phase again and then not shame themselves into, wow, now I forgot to do a to-do list for 3 days. I will never try one again. But she's like, okay, cool, do it again. Like having patience with each other is what I want for us to reach. Like getting over this blaming or saying, yeah, you're not really that. Don't use it as an excuse. No, it's not an excuse. It's an explanation. And then get into, okay, cool, that's what we deal with. These are the 5 tools you can try today. These 5 tools you can try tomorrow. Let's just focus on what we want to achieve.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's a nice world to wish for, that's for sure. Because it's very easy to go, oh yeah, it's just another fad, it's just another trend. Everybody's doing it now, and it's easy kind of to dismiss it. So I would sign my name under that wish, that world, that hope that you've got. What have you got coming up in the next few months? What's kind of in the works for you? I know you're busy at MVP Factory, but within this maybe sphere of neurodivergence, what is it that you're going to be focusing on in the next few months?
Definitely work. No, but if we talk about neurodivergency, and personally not only in the workplace, for me it's important that I look more into tools on how to manage it for myself. I have good days, I have bad days, I have really bad days when my brain just like is useless as fuck. And then I also like, I stopped blaming myself for it. I accepted it. And then because I know like within the next week, my brain will compensate for this and like gets to work of 3 days done in 5 hours. That's just how it works. Okay, cool. But also understanding this a bit better, I'm currently getting the certification to become like a new work facilitator, because again, this also is, it's all very, very tight together, knit together very closely. Helping teams finding out how we can work well together, of course at MVP Factory, but also within the network. You connected me with a very, very great colleague of yours. We also are like touch and go and trying to establish maybe a neurodivergency like community within Berlin or within our industry, because it doesn't exist yet. Spoiler, I haven't texted back yet.
She did mention that to me in passing. So
Yeah, I mean, she also didn't. We were both like,
she's when I met you, when I mentioned your name to my colleague, she went, I'd love to talk to Louisa, and because I feel we're very similar. I'm going, yeah, I think you two are two peas in a pod. So definitely.
Yeah, but like, sometimes this also is bad because we have this great idea and we're not getting there yet because so many other things in life are happening. So this will happen. I am aiming for at one point starting a coaching certification to be able to like just impact our working environment positively and making room for that, helping people with neurodivergencies to actually find their place in the workforce. That's like next 3 to 5 years, I would love to do that, to be able to do that. Very immediate. My daughter turns 6 tomorrow, so got to bake a cake tonight.
Big party.
Actually not, because the sister's on her field trip, so like the big party will happen later. But yes, so baking a cake and then taking both girls to Rome in October.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting plans. Very interesting plans for sure. And I hope the coaching works out. I hope you get in touch with, you continue getting in touch and collaborating with my colleague, because I genuinely think good stuff could come out of it when you two put your heads together. Louisa, it's been an absolute joy to have you back again. And the standing invitation is always available for a third time. Lucky if you'd like to come back a little bit later on to see how things have progressed for you at Empathy Factory in terms of the work that you're doing around anything to do with culture, really, but specifically around divergence. So thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you as well.
Thank you very much to everyone who tuned in. Hope you found this conversation very interesting. I know I have. In case you are interested in little culture micro practices, things that can help you with neurodivergence, but not only, but little things that can change, you can introduce in your workplaces to improve your environments and improve your workplace culture, do check out Culture Micro Practices at human.vm/CMP, CMP for Culture Micro Practices. I was your host, Lev Kozowski. Until next time.